Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Galen might be a loudmouth fool, but sometimes he's quite perceptive. His observations about you, for instance.
Oh?
After what you did on call the two, I doubt if you have much of a future in Starfleet.
Yes. I must say I've come to the same conclusion.
Well, assuming that you were not my prisoner, what would you do now?
I guess I'd start looking for a new career. There must be a place where someone with 15 years of Starfleet technical knowledge would be useful. You wouldn't happen to know a place like that?
Well, possibly. However, there's one thing that I've learned on this ship, and that's to be cautious. And never to blindly embrace what might appear to be good fortune. And right now, you're a rather large stroke of good luck.
I'm going right into it. Maybe we should do a little intro.
What'd you say, Jesse? You were going right into it?
I was going right into it, but right, maybe Jesse, we should start the podcast in a different way where we sort of ease into it. We talk about something else for a while.
Wait, you want to talk about something
G.I.
else for
Joe
a while?
Or something.
G.I. Joe. I want to talk about G.I. Joe.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid.
Talk about the Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
He-Man figures were pretty cool. The show was not.
No, the show was
But
good.
Speaking of the show, that was by Filmation, who also does the animated series of Star Trek.
That's right.
Did that, yeah. In fact.
Yeah. That's a good segue.
Absolutely, yeah. Sir.
A segue? I'm not as sure.
We're not going to talk about the animated series.
Yeah. What is a segue into?
Well, speaking
but
of Star Trek.
It is Star Trek.
Okay. So Filmation. So what was it? He-Man to Filmation to TAS.
Well,
to
first it was
Star Trek generically.
G.I. Joe's to TMNT to He-Man to the He-Man show to Filmation to Star Trek TAS Filmation to Star Trek to here we are.
Okay. All right. Well, here we are. I think that means
here we are.
Now is as good a time as any to start the podcast.
What?
I did not even fully understand that. Was that Picard?
What?
Okay, we'll get to all this, folks.
You're lying.
We will get to it. I'm not lying about that.
You're damn right.
At least not about my intentions.
I'm aware of that.
All right. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts.
I am one of your
hosts. Two other hosts here. We're not going to give our names. You'll have to investigate to find out our names. No, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. Another week here. It's episode number 187.
You're lying.
Of the no. No.
No.
It is episode 187. Not including our bonus. We have bonus episodes out there floating around.
Yeah.
Scroll
I'm
back
sorry.
Into the feed. But yes, episode 187. We're trucking right along here.
You're damn right.
And as you can see,
we're getting to 200.
We've had a lot of practice doing this. We've got a professional outfit here. And tonight, we will be discussing Star Trek The Next Generation, very late in the series, season 7. Episodes 4 and 5, Gambits, parts 1 and 2. Did I get all
what?
That information out there adequately?
I think that checks out.
Yeah.
Gambit. Right. Yes, and Gambit makes me think of things like Gambit.
Damn it.
No, Gambit from the X-Men.
How about Gambit?
Damn it.
It makes me think of somebody saying, onions. You know, somebody saying you have to...
Oh, right, because that guy was all
actually need more onions.
What?
How about gamut? The word gamut.
It does not make me think of the word gamut.
Gamut?
As in to run the gamut, right? It does not make me think of that. It does not make me think of any of those things. Any of those things that you've suggested.
Why?
I guess before we get started, do we have any announcements? Are there any announcements? No announcements?
Like what?
I don't know. I'm tossing it out there. I didn't like square it away with you guys ahead of time.
Do you... You want to announce something?
No, yet? I don't think.
No, there's no time for that.
Well, it's true. We are doing a two-part episode while trying to stay within our regular time constraints. That we
our next objective should prove an interesting challenge,
which we've sort of arbitrarily self-imposed upon ourselves. Okay,
this was a fun episode.
It was a fun episode. There is a lot to discuss.
Lots of fun episode. Bits.
So it's a fun two-part episode. It's weird, right?
Because
a lot of TNG season 7 episodes are a bit weird because they are trying out new things. They're going into different interesting directions, putting the characters in all sorts of scenarios they haven't been put in before, which leads to some...
Yeah.
There's some pluses in mind. You know, there's some dip clunkers in season 7.
It's surprising that... To me, it's a little surprising that Worf is finally learning about how to behave in front of a captain. You know, it seems like that would be an earlier season kind of episode.
Well, I was going to say that while I think this episode is very entertaining, I do think it's a little weird. I do think there are a few flaws in it. Nothing too
flaws
big.
Flaws in it?
Flaws in it?
Flaws and on it. Flaws and flaws in it. Flaws and on it. Flaws and on it. The situation with Worf, I agree. I agree with you. The situation with Worf is sort of the setup is implausible. I think the idea that Worf would act this way, and also that Worf wasn't getting what Data was doing, I think that was the more implausible thing. Everyone understood what Data was doing, and it wasn't really an issue of an officer disagreeing with another officer or with a superior officer, which is how they sort of framed it. It's really more of Worf being weirdly tactically out of the loop for some reason, not figuring this stuff out. On the other hand, I think that the payoff to that somewhat flawed setup is very good. The scene between Worf and Data is a fun scene because the scene
very touching.
Well, because it starts out all serious, right? And Data's all like, "Fuck you, Worf."
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Data does a lot of saying "fuck you" in polite ways in this episode.
I have them all recorded actually.
All the Data, times that Data said "fuck you" in a polite way.
Data is the captain for
there
real.
There were five of them.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear them?
Yeah. I was just briefly going to say that him. It was funny to have him be all like "fuck you, Worf." And then Worf be all like, "No, I'm sorry, I'm an asshole." And then they have that whole like childish, like,
"Oh yeah,
are we friends still?"
Yeah,
and it is childish, but I think in a good way. I think in a way that it would be excellent if more adults like us modeled that sort of communication and behavior with friends. But it did come
because
off
because neither
as a
one
odd.
Of them is emotionally mature.
Yeah, like that's an argument. Okay, let's hear.
That is funny because that through that whole like let's be friends bit, like I couldn't help but like start laughing because it kept going on.
It was very sort of after school special territory.
So wow, some of these are like 20 seconds long.
Whoa, you've got some long clips tonight, Dan.
So there's five of them. Here's
Danny Long Clips.
Insubordinate.
This is Danny. Good old Danny Long Clips.
That's weird.
I really like that.
Long Clips?
Yeah, Danny Long Clips. I think that works.
Long Clips?
Hey, Jesse, I'm perfectly happy having that be his radio nickname.
From now on.
Yeah, from this point forward. All right, whatever, Danny Long Clips.
All right.
Hey, we could have some t-shirts printed out Danny Long Clips.
Why?
Right. It'll be the new, I don't have a prolapse, Danis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a reference to a very old episode of...
I don't give a damn what
you say. A few people have t-shirts.
Okay, Dan, we've dilly-dallied on this clip playing long enough. We made
long
a joke. We were joking that you got these long clips, and as a result, we're taking up much more time had we simply allowed you to start playing the clip.
That's right.
Yes. So I think
you're getting pretty good at this. I've got a mouse today.
Oh, shit. I didn't notice that. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You don't usually
this
have a
mouse.
This
isn't a good idea.
Well, it is a good idea.
Dan is upping his equipment
That's
game.
That's a serious mouse. It's got all kinds of bits on it. Look at that.
It's got some buttons. It doesn't have too many buttons. It's got just the right amount of buttons.
It's got some video game mice.
No, it's not one of them video game crazy mice. No, it's got like a scroll thing.
Looks like a shuttlecraft.
Two buttons. It's got a bottom thing, and it's got like the back forward button, and it's got a horizontal wheel, which only works some of the time.
Back in my day, we only needed two mouse buttons.
Yeah, that's stupid.
No, you just needed click and right click.
Yeah, we can do more things now and it's better.
I do not concede that point. I don't know what... what characters we're creating today.
Well, I like the original Apple that had one button.
No, fuck that. Nobody likes that. That was stupid.
That was stupid.
Even Apple agrees that that was stupid. Okay.
It is the only logical conclusion.
It's we like must... a baby computer.
Playing these clips has now become a mission.
Okay.
Because we have five clips.
This is 20
of varying length.
20 seconds. This All is right. Insubordinate Worf number one.
Without a full compositional analysis of the energy sheath, chances of finding the correct remodulation sequence are remote.
Sir, they have taken Commander Riker. We must do something. We cannot just sit here.
On the contrary, Lieutenant, that is precisely what we must do.
That's right. Where Data said, sit the fuck down,
yeah,
Worf.
Yeah,
I had that in my notes.
So this is number two, which is 20 seconds.
Mr. Worf, prepare to drop shields.
Sir, we would be totally defenseless.
I am aware of that.
Sir, as soon as they see
us... Mr. Worf, that is an order.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, totally appropriate usage of that's an order.
One of two usages.
Yeah, you're right. There was another use. I had that recorded too. Good call. That was totally... I give that... It's rare that I give them... Sometimes,
Dan's thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. Sometimes
two Dan's thumbs up.
Sometimes I'll give them a thumbs up. Sometimes I'll give it a one thumb up, one thumb down. Sometimes just one thumb. Sometimes two thumbs down. Sometimes one thumb down, one thumb up.
There are 2 points of clarification for the audience. Two quick points of clarification for the audience.
Are we going to go over this whole system again?
First of all, just going to note, yes, Dan has this bugaboo about people saying that's an order in a cliched way. And there's a whole
criteria. You're damn right.
There's a whole criteria about it. We just, you know, that's it's probably maybe that was implied from the comments Dan was making, but we do just like to make things clear. The second point of clarification that I think is more broadly necessary is that this rating system that Dan has just espoused, I've never seen it before. He was making all sorts of thumbs up and thumbs down gestures here in the studio, but I've never seen him do that before. He seemed to imply that this is a rating system that goes back some ways, but I'm not familiar with this thumbs up, two thumbs up, no thumbs up, at least your version of it.
Yeah, well, it's
what say you, Dan?
Well, I feel like I was summarizing all the words that I've used in the past to talk about this issue. I've summarized just now as thumbs up and thumbs down, because sometimes I'm like,
which is a more impressive thing.
So
sometimes.
Hey, it's thumb times with Denny Long clips. Come get your thumbs.
So
he's got unlimited thumbs.
Sometimes I think it's terrible usage of, you know, that's an order. Sometimes it's an okay usage. Sometimes it's great usage. This is one of the few great usages where it makes perfect sense.
Gotcha.
Data is a very decisive captain. He's just like, this is what's happening and make it happen. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't make any bones about anything. He's just go to it.
But Data was doing he was also doing a little imitation there. There were three instances.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're not even done with the audio clips. I believe we've only played two Data audio clips.
This is what one would call an aside.
This is an aside.
Or should we put this an aside to a behind? Should we talk about this afterwards?
No.
It's a behind, it's a side.
Okay, so number one, Data in the conference room was doing a finger tent situation.
It's like a Picard style.
Yeah, just like he's people.
That was something.
Speaking of...
Just like he's people.
What? What?
What?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I actually did a spit take. I just spit Red Bull all over myself.
Oh, no.
No, continue, please.
I don't understand it. Bah.
Nah. So, speaking of Picard, number two, he gave it a good old make it so. I was going to say Maple Row. He gave it a good old Maple Row.
Is that Maple Row?
That sounds a little tasty.
Is that like bug eggs that like laid in sap?
Oh, man, that doesn't sound as good as I thought it was going to sound.
Well, you got to boil sap down.
Anyways, so this...
40 times.
So before...
Not like you just slurp it right off the tree.
So before Insubordinate Worf number five, Data gave it a make it so.
Okay. All right, so the aside is talking about the future
West and subordinate ones that we haven't heard yet. Okay, the aside is talking about the different data doing being pretending to be captain. Not pretending to be captain.
This is your aside from your aside.
Imitating captain's behavior. He's doing a finger tent. He said, "Make it so."
Make it so.
And number three, he did a pull the shirt down Picard maneuver after he
totally
reprimanded Worf.
Yeah, totally.
Which, speaking of which, Picard as Galen did, even though he had like a low, he had a low collared shirt on, and he still had to pull it down.
It was still some kind of weird like, getup.
Like, yeah, I guess they are. Maybe they just ride high
some up. Some kind of space mercenary.
They must bunch in the back or something. Anyways, okay, so this is number three insubordinate warp. This is 12 seconds.
They're preparing to activate their warp drive, Commander.
Sir, we cannot track them with our sensors if they go to warp. I can still disable them.
I'm aware of the tactical situation, Lieutenant. Let them go.
He was a little more calm that one.
That's part of what I'm talking about is that I think we've discussed this before, just generally in media, similar to your complaints about when the cliche of that's an order is used or overused. This is one of those examples where the issue seems to be that people aren't communicating adequately. Mm-hmm. And there's actually two layers of issue here. The layer number one is it's always a cliche when somebody could just vocalize something to resolve the issue. And in this case,
that was like every episode of Three's Company.
Exactly. You could argue the Data could simply use more words. And normally Data is not accused of being, constricting his right. vocabulary.
What's the opposite of verbose?
Yes.
There's early episodes where the
taciturn, maybe
Data was just giving him a stream taciturn? Of shit. And they were like, Data, knock it off.
Exactly. Like Vulcan style, like old school Spock style.
Exactly.
And so it was a little out of character for Data to be speaking so subtly in cagey style when there was no need to. He could have just said, like, Worf, I don't know why you're not understanding what clearly everyone else is getting, because that's the other layer of complaint is that all the other, like Beverly and Deanna and Geordi, everyone's looking at Data and clocking exactly what he's doing. They're like, we're all on the same wavelength. We get the deal. We know what's going on here. We don't have to complain about what you're ordering about. The idea that Worf at this stage in his career with these characters wouldn't be getting that, as well as the fact that he's a tactical officer. He also should be understanding this. And they did this sometimes with Worf where they would make, and they've done it with all the characters to some degree or another, sometimes where they make them be the dumb one. And it's always annoying when it happens, even if it makes sense from some sort of dramatic literary perspective.
Concise, terse, succinct.
Taciturn. Look up taciturn.
How do you? I don't even know how to spell taciturn. How do you spell taciturn?
It's spelled like it sounds. Taciturn.
It's with an
taciturn.
I. Though. Not with an E.
Taciturn.
Oh, I kept saying
reserved or uncommunicative in speech, saying little.
No, I spelled that.
So I was correct.
It's not like a tacit.
I actually spelled taciturn correctly the first time. For some reason, I had in my head that you said tacitil, and I was like, I think that's because you were talking, and I was thinking and
looking at like a flower.
I was like, how do you spell tacitil? Tacitil is not a word.
No.
I've known you for many years, Dan, decades, and I think the one issue we've always had is this whole, like, I'm talking and you're thinking situation. It just comes up all the time.
That you're talking while I'm thinking?
No, that's what you just said. You were like, you were all talking and I was all thinking. That's the problem. That's why I thought you said tacitil.
Well, you have never known me not to know the word taciturn, have you?
No, I. You're lawyering me, man. Danny Longclips is playing lawyer ball, lawyer podcast.
Yes,
yeah, no. The way you phrased that, yes, you're correct. I think is the correct answer. All right. How many? We've done three. Clips
by the
now?
Way, by the way, that
by the by,
by the pilot or whatever, was that Sandra from the Cosby Show?
That was Sandra? That was Ensign Sandra Huxtable. Yes.
Was that Sandra Huxtable?
I really liked how
it
much
absolutely was.
How much they gave that character to do. That character had a lot to do in this particular. You know, for an extra compared to what they normally, which is normally
most
they do
Ensigns,
that weird Star Trek thing where they don't say a word. They just click the tap on the thing and then they randomly get up and walk away when a main character walks in.
This would have been after she's off the show.
Sabrina LaBeouf, like Shy LaBeouf.
Yeah. I don't believe they're related, but I think it's the same name.
Interesting. Interesting.
All right. So
here's number four. This is the longest one at 30 seconds.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
Oh, this is a big boy.
Actually, I don't know if it's spelled the same.
You got to put some onions on that big boy.
Some what? Right.
Some onions.
Onions.
Don't you know onions? Onions.
I've been watching a Cajun YouTuber who has a big old pot and he just throws a bunch of shit in a pot and stirs it around for like 6 or 7 hours. And he's always talking about you got to put more onions in the pot.
What?
You heard me.
Onions.
30 seconds, Insubordinate Worf number four.
Two starships have been sent to intercept the mercenaries at Yadala Prime and Draken 4 in case they attempt to attack those planets.
Inform Starfleet Command that we will hold position until further notice.
So, we are just going to remain here?
Yes, but we will continue to pursue all avenues of investigation.
If we had not let them escape, this would not be necessary.
That is correct. But I believe Commander Riker wanted us to let them escape.
Commander, I think I found something.
So, yeah, this is... Worf is really getting kind of ballsy now at this point. He's just like, if we had just done this, like this, we would have been like that. But we didn't do that, so we were not like this.
It's the... For me, it's the weak point of the episode. Even though it leads to a strong point of the episode.
No,
it's... And it's a decision you have to make sometimes when you're storytelling.
That is true, because that was the most obvious... The point where it was the most obvious that Data had something going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. What are you even thinking about?
Yeah.
What's even going on here?
Okay, this is the last one. This is 14 seconds.
Well, their maximum speed is warp 8.7. It would take them at least 14 hours to reach that position.
We could be there in 5.
Make it so.
Finally.
Maximum warp.
Finally.
Yeah, I know, right?
Finally.
And that's what set Data off.
Yeah. And here I cut out, as a bonus, the spaces of their apology so it's a little condensed. So the vocal spaces between, I'm
not entirely getting what you're saying, but I imagine I will understand it when you play it.
It's the clip of them making friends, and then all the quiet time. I cut out all the quiet time. The quiet time, because they were having quiet time during their conversation. Yeah.
When you were in kindergarten, that was like your least favorite part of the day. It was quiet time.
When I grow up, I'm going to cut out all the quiet time.
They like turned off the lights and shit.
I remember it was preschool having nap time, and I didn't know what you were supposed to do during nap time, so I just laid there with my eyes open. I didn't know you were supposed to sleep.
Nap time was awful.
It was like,
I'm done with naps. Why are you making me take a nap?
Yeah, looking up at the sky.
So here's
they wouldn't even let you read. I'd be like, can I read my book? And they'd be like, no.
No, you just have to lie there.
No reading. Reading makes you think things.
Yeah, we don't want that during nap time.
No.
Okay, this is Data and Worf.
I closed my eyes and pretended I was somewhere else.
This is Data and Worf making up.
Mr. Worf, I am sorry if I have ended our friendship.
Sir, it is I who has jeopardized our friendship, not you. If you will overlook this incident, I would like to continue to consider you my friend.
I would like that as well.
Thank you, sir.
That was a weird, uncomfortable scene.
Are you notice
I cut out all the quiet. I cut out all the quiet time between the.
Where's Dylan?
No, I didn't even notice. I was like, "Is that the one with the quiet time cut out?"
Yeah, it was. If you watch it, it's a lot more. There's a lot more quiet time in that
it's
exchange.
Like the remix version,
the original version.
I think partly, I've already explained that my whole criticism of the idea of whether or not Worf would actually behave like this. Right. So set that aside. I think the other problem here is we've already dealt with Data in the scenario of somebody undermining or questioning his command. And that was in Redemption 2, when Data temporarily takes command of the USS Sutherland. Mm-hmm. And he has a first officer who's a complete racist dickhead.
Oh, yeah.
Is his name after Donald Sutherland?
I don't know. We'd have to check Memory Alpha or an alternate resource to determine whether or not that was the case. And in that episode does it really well because it's a two-sided coin thing because Data is also unsure about taking his first command. He's got a bit of a imposter syndrome. He's a little concerned whether or not he's ready for it. But on the flip side, he's also dealing with this piece of shit asshole. And through the course of the episode, Data proves himself to the asshole, and the asshole realizes that Data is actually a very good commander. But the point is they already did that story, and that story worked because the guy who was the antagonist, he didn't know Data. He had to get over his prejudice of Data, of androids. Worf was not in no such position. Worf loves Data. Worf thinks Data's amazing and awesome.
Data's stronger than Worf.
And Worf all of a sudden is going to be like, what the fuck? I'm not going to listen to Data. Data's a piece of shit. Even though it's clearly like all part of the plan and everyone else is on board with it.
It would have made sense as an earlier season episode.
Maybe.
If they were gonna...
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I mean, I'm not... Like Dr. Pulaski.
Yeah, like a season one episode, maybe.
Yeah, not saying it would have been perfect, but I think it would have made more sense than being like a later season episode.
And by the way, I think it could be, because again, I know why they did it. They did it for the story reason, the plot reason of creating some conflict to have that nice emotional resolution. And that scene is really great where they talk out their friendship. I kind of think you could maybe accomplish very similar something like that, having Worf be more generically frustrated and not frustrated specifically with Data, but that it has the same result. Yeah. That Data still has to chastise him because he's like, dude, you're fucking shit up and you can't be doing that. And Worf is like, oh man, thanks for calling me out. I didn't, because that's what they're doing here. They're creating a scenario where it's like cool to call each other out. Because to say like, look, you're not behaving cool. You got to correct this behavior. And they could still have that lesson. They could still have that scene without Worf being kind of dumb about everything.
This episode was all about following orders. So you have a situation where both ships, there's insubordination going on. But when the insubordination on Baron's side is met with mutiny because he's a dick. And on Data's side, it ends with a big old hug with Worf. Because Worf's like, oh man, I didn't mean to piss you off. Whereas the other place, they were like, fuck you, you pissed me off. You know, also Piker and Ricard. Is that
Piker?
Picard and Riker.
Oh, okay. Is that their romance name?
No, I was.
Their shipper name is Piker?
I accidentally said.
Because I don't like Piker because it sounds too close to like some Western European slurs.
I accidentally said Ricard and Piker.
Ricard?
I accidentally said Ricard.
Ricard is okay.
No, but then
it's making me a little nervous.
All I did was say Ricard.
It's making me a little nervous, but I think we're cool.
And then I was
All
I was trying to do was all I was trying to do was play out the joke, be like, oh, Ricard. I mean, yeah, Ricard and Piker. You know, I was trying to play out my mispronunciation.
I get it now.
I wasn't trying to.
The joke was very good. It was very subtle. It was just a little too subtle, but not in a negative way.
It wasn't meant to be negative. It was just like
in an Arrested Development, people will re-listen to this episode of the podcast like 10 times and they'll only get it on the 10th time. Now we've explained it, but had you not explained it, people would have only gotten that joke on their 10th listen of this podcast.
I bet some people still aren't going to get it.
You're damn right.
Okay.
So what I was saying is Picard and Riker, there's a level of insubordination that they have to be towards Starfleet in order to pull this all off, which I'm... Why do you think? Picard went down to this planet to find, just because he was on one of his usual Picard, like,
The setup, which we don't get to until later, of course, the setup is Picard is on vacation,
right?
Which is already, I mean, it's...
When Picard goes on vacation, he has, like, this side job where he's, like, he digs for...
He's an Indiana Jones type. Yeah. But because remember, in Captain's Holiday, he didn't want to go on vacation. He was forced to go on vacation.
I guess I'll read Ulysses instead.
And then he ends up... he takes Ulysses to Risa. But he ends up having an archaeological adventure. And this is in some ways a retread of
that. Adventure.
It's like a two-part retread, except the difference here is instead of meeting up with Vash and getting into a weird time travel aliens adventure or whatever that was, he gets kidnapped and joins an archaeological raiding gang. Which is weird and interesting.
Captain Brooklyn.
I'm glad it wasn't an undercover thing, because we've complained in the past before about, like, why is it Picard is going on undercover missions?
Yeah.
Is that how Starfleet as an organization works?
Well, Data really stepped it up. He was actually said to Riker, he was like, hey man, you're the acting captain of this ship. You shouldn't be going down to this planet.
Yeah.
And Data actually pointed it out to him. He was just like, no, I'm going to do it anyway.
Should have been Data.
Data was just nervous about being the thing.
What was Data going to do? He could do what Riker did, which was punch his commanding officer.
He could open doors. Man.
Remember, because that's what Picard liked about Riker, is that Riker punched out his commanding officer once when he was like trying to like go down to some dangerous situation.
So it's obviously, in order to do the right thing, Picard and Riker have to like play this game where they're like going, like breaking Starfleet rules and being bad because they're doing that undercover thing where you're playing the other side. But they weren't put on a mission. They were just captured. Now, they didn't even discover this whole
Stone of Gaul.
Yes, the Stone of Gaul.
Psionic gallstone. Psionic resonator.
They didn't find out about that until like way later in the episode. By that time, unless I'm remembering my timeline incorrectly, they had already broken Starfleet rules before they even found out about this Stone of Gaul thing.
Totally.
It wasn't clear to me.
Because
like my question is how are they validated?
How are they justifying their actions?
How are they justifying their actions?
I think they can justify their actions just fine in the existing plot because
they capture a bunch of space pirates.
They've been kidnapped, but in addition to that, and them both being kidnapped, they are doing all these raids on these Romulan sites and stuff like
that. That's true. They're doing a bunch of raids.
There's sort of like a generic, these guys are bad guys. They're up to something. And I think at all points, everyone except for Worf is portrayed as being very competent and sort of ahead of the game on this. So even when they don't know the specific details about the Stone of Gaul, they do know something's up.
Psionic resonator.
Something bigger than just stealing a few artifacts to sell on the black market, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose that it works. I suppose it works. Troy, so this in an exchange, Worf was, he's like, when Riker's, when Riker first gets on the, speaking of betraying the Starfleet or whatever, when Riker's on the comm screen, he's like, hey, you guys, I'm going to get you guys to the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And then, he's like setting up some shit where he's going to fuck him up. And Worf's like, Commander, we're receiving some kind of signal from the mercenary ship. These are Commander Riker's access codes. He is attempting to shut down our shields. And then Troy's like, that doesn't make any sense. He knows those codes would have been changed as soon as he was captured. Mm-hmm. This is one point in time where Troy's like Beta Z powers would really be useful, as opposed to being like, I sense anguish, or I sense... Oh, I just whistled. I wonder if that'll carry through the podcast.
I hope so.
when she's like, I sense deception or whatever. Why couldn't she sense deception on Riker? And then she wouldn't have to be...
Well, she did... She was pretty active, particularly in the first part.
She was active
in the first episode of this.
She was, two-parter. But I would argue that this was the most important part for her to be able to sense deception. Yeah, was but this
it never,
moment?
It never works when it's the most helpful.
Well, that's what my point is. Like, you say that as if like, oh yeah, well that's just the rule.
No,
but I'm just
you're
saying
right,
like,
you're
but
right.
I'm saying it's just it's like if there's one time trick and think of it as an amusing aside, not just a regular aside, amusing aside that Troy's powers when they could be most effective, like in moments of sensing deception in order to plan some kind of subterfuge to beat the bad guy, somehow she couldn't pull it out. Why?
I suppose in this case, I find it a little less aggravating. I mean, in the past, I have found the underuse of Troy, who's such a great character, you know, aggravating. In this particular case...
He owes me money.
In this particular case, what they were going for was highlighting Data's command capability.
Right.
And specifically his puzzle solving capability. And as such, since they so swiftly deduced that the only reason he could be sending those codes is to convey the message, that her powers were just not necessary to convey at the time.
So
real quick, I also don't think for a moment anybody on that bridge thought that Riker was anything but lying. Like nobody thought that he was actually, you know, that's the other aspect. There's like not one person would have for a moment thought Riker was actually turning into a criminal.
What you just said strangely is like the most appeasing, because if she doesn't get it, it's like, well, nobody got it. Everyone should have gotten it.
It's unnecessary.
It's not that she was the only one that should have gotten it. Everyone should have gotten it. Yeah. So we just can assume they did. But I understand the point of the episode is to highlight Data's prowess as a captain.
He's programmed in multiple techniques.
Yes, indeed.
Multiple
fully
command.
Functional.
Multiple and, command techniques.
And I understand that that was the focus, but that doesn't excuse the fact that Troy has this power that's sitting around. And that should be, normally when they open up a comm screen with someone on there, immediately before anyone even asks her, she's like, you know, I sense
like, this motherfucker's fucked
up. I sense unhappiness.
This is a
or
fucked
something.
Up motherfucker.
Yeah, basically.
Although frequently when she says that, everyone's like seeing on the screen, they're like, yeah, we can tell. He looks like a child molester.
Yeah, right.
Okay. How about this? Let's take a break.
No!
Space creep.
And when we get back, we will continue our discussion
space
of
space creep. There's no
Gambit parts 1 and 2.
There's no Neelix in this episode.
Be right back. All right, we have returned. We have returned.
What?
We have returned to the audio program in which we are discussing Star Trek TNG Season 7, Episodes 4 and 5, Gambit Parts.
No, there's no time for that.
1 and 2. All right. Next up in the thing, we're not really doing anything in order here tonight.
Because Jesse mentioned it earlier, I want to play quickly the other That's an Order clip.
Mr. Data, withdraw the Enterprise. That's an order.
I mean, that was pretty. That was, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good as the. It wasn't as good as Data.
Is that a one thumbs up?
That's a one thumb one. It's a one thumb one. It's a one thumb one thumb up, one thumb down.
Okay. Since we've jumped around, we've talked about some of the key things here.
Of what?
other key things, all the whole Picard business, which we touched briefly on.
You touched briefly on Picard?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
When Riker gets
like that.
Kidnapped and brought up to the ship by the...
He doesn't want that kind of adventure.
And then Picard, first of all, Picard mentions that they have weapons that act like transporters, which is like what Seven of Nine invented on Picard.
Did you notice, though, that they had Zapier transporters when they transported away? Like the Starfleet all goes like... This was all like zip, zap, zip, zap, zip, zap, zip, zap.
One of my favorite things when watching old TOS episodes... Those old scientists.
Those old scientists.
Is how slow the transport thing is. It just gets faster each show until in Picard. It's all like, or like in Discovery, in latter season Discovery, super quick.
There's something strange here.
Very strange. Okay, we have been jumping around. what was I talking? I was trying to talk about. Oh yeah, Picard. Picard's whole business. We touched on it a little bit already, but it is kind of funny to see Picard in this situation because on the one hand, he's effectively a hostage, but he seems to be having a great deal of fun, right? Mm-hmm. So he was probably having fun trying to figure out who was messing with these various Romulan ruins and stuff. He gets kidnapped by these folks and he disguises himself as this archaeological expert. He's getting to act like the heavy. And I'm sure Patrick Stewart was like, I'd like an episode where I get to be an asshole or something, you know. and they're like, we got an idea for you. It's a two-part asshole episode. You're gonna be an asshole this whole time.
It's gonna be called Gambit.
You and I should continue our masquerade.
He names himself Galen after his own mentor, his archaeology professor, Professor Galen.
That was in a different episode.
It was in a different episode. And I think that actor might still be alive. That actor's 100-something. Yeah. If he died very recently. So Professor Galen, his mentor, he named himself after that fella. And
oh, what a tangled web we weave.
And he seems very eager. He's using all his skills and everything to avoid dying himself and to avoid other people getting hurt as best he can. So that part's great. And that all works out for him.
Why do they all
agree? But otherwise, he's 2021.
Otherwise, he's doing all sorts of hilarious, shady stuff this whole time.
Why do they agree to have those pain patches on their neck?
I don't think they agree. But I get the impression they just stick them on.
But like the crew, they were all mercenaries, so they had to agree to that in order to get their money.
Maybe it was part of the contract.
Yeah. I wouldn't take that contract.
No, of course not.
The Galen actor died in 2021.
Oh, okay, so it was recent.
And he was born in 1914.
Mm. Yeah, he did all right. I think he was acting until he was like 100, too. The whole crew is kind of interesting because, first of all, there's Baran, who I love.
Ba 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 Baran. Ba 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 Baran. Ba 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 ba.
It's good to let it play out.
It's quite good. Sorry.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it.
Baran is pretty fucking rad.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Because he's like I know this is.
Wait, is that the guy from Brooklyn?
He's from Brooklyn, but he's got that like he's like an 80s, he's like a perfect 80s villain. He's all flamboyant. He's got the eyeshadow. He looks like he could be in Mad Max.
He's
fantastic. And I know this was in the 90s.
A little bit of the Khan, the gang that's hanging out with Khan. They kind of look like that sort of space pirate.
Except so many of the people, there's all these people in the background who don't have any lines. There's only the four characters that have lines, and really it's Baran and T'Pol.
T'Pol!
T'Lara, who is actually T'Pol.
She was in another Star Trek movie.
Yes, that's Robin Curtis. She played Savick in Star Trek's...
replacing
3 and 4.
Christy Alley, right?
Yes. So,
my name is actually T'Pol, and I am a member of the Vashar.
The Vashar.
My name is actually T'Pol.
Different T'Pol.
Yes.
My name is actually T'Pol.
Her name is actually T'Pol, spelled with two A's as opposed to.
Yeah, that's right.
But it still has an apostrophe between the T and the P.
She's a Vulcan.
You got to have an apostrophe there.
Or
a Klingon.
Do you think her name was actually T'Pol or do you think it was actually T'Lara? Because she was lying about maybe her name was something else that she didn't even mention.
I wouldn't trust her as far as I.
So, in terms of the T'Lara T'Pol character. We've got a lot going on there that I think is really great. One being that, first of all, it's great to see Robin Curtis again. She was a great actress and a great addition to Star Trek. And I also really like that they're pulling this gag. And again, this is the type of stuff they started. Yeah, they started doing this in season 7 of TNG, where they're trying to they're inverting
a bunch of gags.
They're inverting some of the cliches of Star Trek, both TOS and TNG. They're playing around with different things. And what they're doing here is they're inverting the old Romulan posing as a Vulcan. Now it's a Vulcan posing as a Romulan, which we hadn't, you know, we'd seen plenty of the other before, but not so much this. And having Robin Curtis do it has a little meta bonus to it, because with Savick, the original conception there of Savick, and there were a few times they played around with this idea of having her be either Romulan or part Romulan. It never showed up on the screen in that sense. I really enjoyed that part of it. And the character was in a lot of ways a fairly standard character for this type of story, but I thought well portrayed, well written. And it was fun to watch her kind of do her thing.
Do not deny it.
Whoa. If you if you double click it, you make it sound like it's in a robot.
Sneaky.
Do not deny it. There was a confusing line. She was talking to Picard after. I can't remember. God, I keep like doubling up all my syllables
and your audio clips too. Apparently,
yeah. Wow, I got the case of the twofers.
It's the soda. Stop I think, drinking so much soda.
I think this maybe was before she revealed herself. She says to Picard, she says, "What Brand knows? What Brand knows? I know, right?" She goes, "What Brand knows? I know," and then Picard's like, "Then what's going on here? Why are we raising them? Who wants them?" And then she goes, "I see no reason to tell you anything, but you can rest assured I don't necessarily everything I know with Baran either." So what Baran knows,
she doesn't share what she knows with
Baran, but he shares everything with her. But Baran shares everything with her, but she doesn't share anything with Baran.
According to her, she's a sneaky Vulcan.
Do you think they've got some kind of relationship going? Is that why she has top power? Her and Baran have something intimate.
Top power.
Like, no, I mean, like, she's not okay, that kind of time.
I don't see it.
Just to clarify.
I think she's cold and icy.
She got regular old power.
Regular old power. I'm thinking, like, because she seems to be at the top level. And
I didn't catch any hint of a relationship.
Why is he telling her more information than he tells other people?
I just sort of got the idea that she was the second in command.
She's equally arch.
And in truth, she's the one driving. Of course, we know by the end that she's driving all of this. So she in fact does know more than Baran.
Yeah, but what
she's positioned herself under Baran, but she's using him.
So wait, you don't think when she said what Baran knows, I know, she wasn't saying Baran tells me everything. She's just like, I'm just that. He doesn't know that I know what he knows.
I think what she
it is
was,
the only logical conclusion.
There's the truth in what she, and then there's what she was conveying to Picard or Riker, and there's some overlap, and there's some conflict.
Riker.
I think the truth is she knows everything that Baran knows.
Riker.
Because
Riker.
She's actually in charge.
Riker.
Even if Baran doesn't know that, mm-hmm. she's the one who's driving all this. She knows about everything. She's the one who's pulling the strings, right? What I think she's trying to convey to Picard is that she has a close relationship with Baran.
And that's what I'm saying.
But not a romantic
relationship. I think they're intimate.
No.
I see no
there
evidence
no
for
evidence.
That.
No evidence.
Do not deny it.
I deny.
I will deny it.
I shall.
Repeatedly and vociferously. You will not
most
find.
Adamantly.
We will not find over here a taciturn participant in this debate.
The Enterprise has been badly damaged, but they still have superior firepower. Superior firepower. Superior firepower. Superior firepower. Superior firepower. Superior firepower. Superior firepower.
Superior firepower.
You're making me laugh, but that quote.
Superior firepower.
The first part firepower.
The first part of that quote reminds me of it's a similar cadence when she in the character of Savick, when Robin Curtis in the character of Savick in Star Trek 3 says, "David is dead." Which is a very depressing.
The Enterprise has been badly damaged.
That one?
Yeah. I mean,
the Enterprise has been badly damaged.
David is dead.
Firepower. 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 Firepower.
Firepower.
Superior firepower. Firepower. Superior firepower.
Firepower.
Firepower. Superior firepower. Firepower.
Superior firepower. Dan.
But they still have superior firepower. But they still have superior firepower.
Okay.
Danny Long Clips.
I was obsessing over that, like, as I was.
Oh, really? I had no
idea. Is that what you call that?
Even before tonight. Another line I thought was kind of fun was when Picard was all like
478 B.
That is really good.
I like that one.
I totally missed that one.
I like that one better than that one. Play that again.
478 B. B. B.
Should make a tune out of that. That could be remixed, I think.
A tune.
Firepower.
Pretty well remixed into a tune.
B.
Firepower.
The name of the tune would be 478B.
It would just, you know.
Firepower.
478B.
B. Yeah, because that's like a very like future, like apocalyptic corporations control the future kind of like number thing, letter thing.
What, 478B?
Just to go, I am 478.
That's my number.
B.
Bay.
I have a number.
And there could be a bunch of bees everywhere going.
478 bees.
No, sir.
The Richard Lynch fella who plays Baran, he was in Scarecrow. He was in The Sword and the Sorcerer.
Yeah, I mean,
The Sword and the Sorcerer. Hi.
Richard Lynch.
He was in Savage Dawn. And I really like this in the IMDb.
Battlestar Galactica.
When you're looking through IMDb, he's all like, he's in Alligator 2. And then he was in Puppet Master 3.
Hmm.
Never in the first ones.
He was on Airwolf.
But yeah, he was
on Blue Thunder.
He was on Battlestar Galactica, a number of other television shows.
The A-Team.
But this is the by far guy. His best role.
Charmed.
As Baran in this two-part episode of...
Agreed.
Star Trek The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else about this ragtag gang of people? Because you had these two other characters whose names I can never remember. One was Narek. The other one Narek was an 80s weird hair lady with the face.
Veronica or something?
Veronica, yeah.
Vecor.
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 Vecor. She only got a couple lines.
What is her name?
And then all the other people were just greasy haired background people. Who seemed to be like different people.
The bartender guy in the beginning.
Yeah, that guy looked
familiar.
He was on
Seinfeld. He was, if you remember the episode where like he's got this guy like making cabinets in his kitchen and he keeps asking him questions about how do you want this and how do you want that? And Jerry gets all flustered and he's like, listen, man, just do it and get it done. And then like he builds this crazy thing like that nobody likes.
He owes me money.
It was that guy was on set.
He played like a sleazy kind of bartender guy.
Oh, yeah. He kept hitting on
Stephen
on Troy.
Lee. It was
Lee. When Uranek was about to like spill the beans, he came up and he's like, "Don't tell him, Uranek." But then Uranek told him anyways, like with that guy just standing there. He's like, he's like, "Shut up, or I'll kill you," or whatever he says to Uranek.
That was that little wrinkly.
But that Uranek,
he was an Iridian.
Iridian.
I guess he. Even though. Like he was directly being threatened with the man by the man
wrinkly in his
by voice. The man standing next to him. I guess the reason he didn't shut up is because they gave him protection or something. But it was just kind of weird.
They also threatened him. Riker threatened him later.
So he's got one guy in front of him.
He had all those snacks in front of him.
This big dude. No, I'm talking about back at the bar. This big dude. When there's like this big like monster. Gonna hurt me thing floating above me. He's telling me, don't tell him or I'll hurt you.
Gonna hurt me.
And then someone across the way is just like, come on, tell me. I'm not gonna then be like, okay, I'll tell you, because what's gonna prevent that big bartender dude from then smushing me, you know?
Right. Well, I think I think he was thinking there might be some profit in.
Yeah, he wanted to risk it.
Iridians are known.
No, but
they're always presented as being shady.
They're not gonna
I mean, I understand. It's totally obvious.
Because in Birthright, you had James Cromwell playing an Iridian.
But it's of course, like he was.
And he was another shady.
Of course,
one.
He was trying
shady people.
Of course, he was trying to get paid because he tried to like make a deal with Riker, and Riker was just like, "No, we'll throw you in jail." And he's like, "Okay, I'll tell you." I'm just saying, no amount of money is worth getting killed for if you have a big dude standing next to you. I think they did it for convenience.
Agree with that philosophy wholeheartedly.
I think they did the scene for convenience so they didn't have to restage and move around and all this shit.
So probably you're right. But I would suggest that your mindset, while I agree is the correct mindset.
I don't know where he's going with this.
All I'm saying is there's some people who have a different perspective and they're like, actually, no, my life is worth, I'm totally happy to risk my life in exchange for shitloads of money. I would argue there are many people who are willing to risk their life for shitloads of money. Maybe it's not smart. But
I would risk my life for money, perhaps, but like
in
not,
Starfleet, they don't pay it because they don't have any money.
My point is the guy standing right next to him, he could have smushed him right then and there. I would have at least been like...
I agree with your initial supposition was that he assumed that wouldn't happen in the context of who he was with.
If I was Uranek, I would be like, hey, meet me later around the corner.
Now, his name pronounced Uranek, or was it like Ranek?
Was it Uranek?
Uranek.
It's Uranek. Uranek.
Uranek.
I would have said, if I was Uranek, I would have said, hey, I'm not going to make this deal with you with this guy standing here, but let's go around the corner, then we can start talking shop. That's what I would have done. That's if I was Uranek.
Do you think you have the monopoly on loss?
Monopoly.
That was a great scene, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because it comes so early in the episode and there's so much inter-crew conflict throughout.
Well, let me tell you something.
Because Riker, when I'm watching Riker talk about like, no, I want to have it's an open wound and I want to fucking feel bad. My first thought was like, men are so fucking stupid. We're cultured in at least in North America, in the US, we're enculturated in such a bizarre way as to be like, oh, I want to feel the pain. What was great is they showed that and then they immediately have Troy come and be like, fuck you, man. You're a piece of shit. This is ridiculous. You don't be so, it is a selfish thing to do is be like, you have a responsibility in your role as acting captain, as first officer to help out with it. Doesn't matter what you want to do. And this whole, like the whole revenge fantasy thing, because there is a lot of that going, they don't play it up too much. It's more at the beginning of the episode and it fizzles a little bit, but this whole idea is like, we're out for revenge. As opposed to the completely justifiable, we're out to capture the people who did something bad to our friend. And we are in a position to enforce the law anyway. So we are partly responsible to catch those people.
I like that. That exchange was kind of like a roller coaster for me because, like, out of nowhere, you know, Riker's just like,
you're damn right.
He's like, rah! And then out of nowhere, she's like,
do you think you have the monopoly on law? Well, let me tell you something.
And then, like, so then they have that thing
where there was that clip was cut in a
funny place. I cut it short.
Do you think you have the monopoly on loss?
Oh,
well, let me tell you something.
Sorry, I got too excited. I jumped the gun.
The monopoly on law.
So they have this like exchange. First, they're quiet. And then Riker's just like, bah! And then she's like, bah! And then he's like, get out of here. And then before she can go anywhere, he's like, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, like it's like you start level, it gets out of control. And then in the course of like 30 seconds, it gets back down to like, it's like, oh, it's cool again. So it was a real roller coaster of emotions for me. I had to take a breather after that scene.
It's man stuff.
Did you like pause the show for a little bit? Go make some ramen.
No.
Come back with a full belly and be like, all right, I'm ready to go.
Speaking of full belly, Uranic was eating some kind of like sour cream cucumber numblers, like on the
numblers
on the ship. When
there was some kind of he had some crazy snacks.
It looked good. Like it looked like sour cream and onions and chives or something was involved.
I didn't think that, but it looked tasty.
You know what I like? You know what I like? I liked, and you can only get these at like refreshment tables after shows.
Refreshment tables after shows.
You're talking about like concerts?
Yes.
Are you saying concerts in which you played at as a performer?
No. Just as we see a show or concert, whatever you want to call it, and then afterwards there's a refreshment table. Like when you're,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Like, I've never experienced.
You mean the bar?
No, like when you go to like, you know, like a concert, a school function, or
a school,
but
dance.
Not necessarily, but not necessarily school. They do it in many forms of many things,
or a piano recital.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah, like a piano recital.
People,
there you go.
And there's cookies and hummus. And
what?
Yeah.
And
dippy cookies.
This is something that you could easily make yourself because it's super easy. But I only ever have it at those events is when they have the little cucumber and cream cheese rolls or sandwiches. They're either rolls or they're sandwiches, but there's cucumbers and I think it's cucumber and cream cheese. And it's so good. It's so good.
Cucumbers are really good, and if you just you just add them to something, and it just makes it into magic.
You could even like dip it in ranch and pour some salt on it, and that's like something to do.
Yeah. You can eat it like corn.
That's crazy.
I know, just kind of rotate it around in your mouth. And just, well, of course you eat the skin. You don't eat cucumber skin?
No, you're saying just eat the skin.
No, I mean, you eat the whole thing, but you eat it in corn fashion.
I like the skin.
In the style of a cornery, of a corn eater.
In a cornery?
Coronary.
I don't understand any of this.
No, me neither. No. I think we've lost the plot.
But somewhat. But I never think to make them because it's like, who would want to make something like that? I'm sure a lot of people do. I'm sure a lot of people are like, I'm sure a lot of people are like, I make those every fucking day.
Just to like have for themselves around the house.
Yeah, because if I'm going to say like, who wants to spend the time making that? You know, there's people out there. It's like, I make them every day. Stop doing your comedy. Stop doing your comedy. Stop doing your comedy routine. Because people, it's flawed premise because people do make them on a regular basis. Okay, no. But just nobody I know.
Are you talking about my comedy routine?
I'm talking about like when you
generic
do
generic comic. No, I was going to say that argument is an it makes sense because they have replicators, and so once you have a replicator, then you don't give a fuck about the particularness of it, like the thing that's finicky to make. You can make as many of them as you want. You can stuff
make
this
fucking lobster empanadas.
You can stuff this lumpy alien full of all the cucumber he could imagine, because all it is feces that's been reconfigured into cucumber type shapes, and then
it's shit.
And then you can beat him
up
afterwards.
It's pretty good for shit.
Because that's what Riker did. Riker replicated him a bunch of cucumber sandwiches and then roughed him up because he was playing good cop and bad cop at the same time.
What I was getting at, and that's true, they can totally do that, but I don't know in the future if they eat those kinds of things. But I was doing...
They do. We just watched them eat those kinds of things.
I was doing that whole stand-up routine thing where it's like, who does this anyway? Who makes their own cucumber sour cream or cream cheese sandwiches anyway? Nobody. And you know, there's someone who's like, well, I do. So your premise is wrong. I'm saying that my comedy routine had a faulty premise.
Okay. All right. You've clarified that, but just in case, we do want anybody...
You make
anybody,
your own croutons?
If you make your own croutons... No.
It's
not a croutonette. If you make your own cucumber croutons. Cream cheese sandwiches at home, the little bite-sized appetizer-style ones, not a full one. This doesn't count, by the way, if you just get a fucking baguette or whatever and make your own sandwich. We're talking about the appetizer kind.
I'm aware of that.
If you make those on the regular, write into feedback@itsgotstartrek.com and let us know. And
I don't give a damn what you think.
You make your own cilantro chutney.
Provide us with a recipe if you have a suggestion for a preferred brand of cracker or bread or whatever, which type of cucumber you use, because there are a variety of cucumbers.
Thank you.
I like them little ones.
Yeah, no, those little ones are good. Little ones are good.
I see.
Okay, back to the show.
Yes.
Star Trek: The Next Generation.
And Admiral Chakotay.
Chakotay.
Spelled Chekote, not Chakotay.
Right.
Admiral Chakotay.
And this one was loyal, not a Maquis.
That was interesting, that name. Like the T'Pol business and the Narek business, by the way, because in Picard season one there was a character named Narek, Romulan Narek.
Yeah, do you notice that when they were doing the laser fight scene on the planet?
That was a good one.
That was a really good. That was well choreographed.
Yeah, and it looked like LeVar Burton did his own stunts in that. He flipped over the rock. Yeah. That was pretty good.
I love little more than a well executed California phaser fight.
Yeah,
California phaser fight.
Top of the line California phaser fight, where they were in like a park. They were hanging out in an arboretum somewhere, rolling around, pretending to shoot at each other.
There was less of a fire risk back in the day.
I was watching some movie. It was supposed to take place on some other planet, and they were in some forest, and I was like, that looks like it's just some park in California somewhere. I was trying to picture like a park around here and make a movie and just pretend it's like outer space, and like you can just do that if you don't catch any like sidewalks and extraneous people.
Star Trek's got that thing going back to TOS where if it's a super alien planet, it's, you know, they make it out of cardboard and stuff, and it looks all super alien. Or it just looks like Southern California.
They went to a couple of California.
If it's a real place, it's just like, okay, we're at like a Southern California place.
Last week when we did Enterprise and they went to Vulcan and we were looking out the windows, it just looked like the orange that was supposed to be the Vulcan background just looked like an orange screen. It didn't really look like
hazy.
It's kind of
Star Trek has a lot of those situations going on where the background you're like, wait, that's supposed to be outside, but it's just like an orange wall or something.
TOS is always like pink or something out there.
Right.
This episode they went to Vulcan, like, they went, you know, into Vulcan space, and then there at the end you saw like the planet Vulcan. I believe that was Vulcan.
Are you talking about the Gambit?
Yeah, because remember they arrest everybody and everything goes down.
And Vulcan's
on Vulcan.
Got like some sea action going on.
They got some oceans. And stuff.
I didn't realize they had oceans.
You gotta have water.
I thought it was all just nothing.
Nah, you gotta have some water.
Yeah, you gotta have some
desert, some volcanoes. I thought it was some
volcanoes.
Kind of razorback creatures.
Well, I bet they have some cool monsters in Vulcania.
They do.
Vulcan like volcano.
Yeah.
Is it a volcano?
They have Salots.
Salots and Barbos.
Achaia the Salot. All right. Continue with this plot.
Speaking of Geordi, like...
Were we talking about Geordi? Oh, yeah. Geordi doing... You said he was doing his own stunts.
When he was examining the ruins, that little blast mark thing...
His magic eyeballs?
Yeah, his magic eyeballs. Would you that would be considered a deus ex machina, his visor.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
No, the reason not, because he's had the visor, and the visor
it didn't
has
just
previously
come out of nowhere.
been...
It's previously been used, but like that. But that was just a straightforward, like, let's move the plot along.
Well, no. Things can be used. Everything's moved, used to move the plot along.
Well, I know and ideally, that.
I'm arguing against this being referred to as a deus ex machina because by definition, a deus ex machina has to be something that comes out of nowhere and is unexpected and none of the previous stuff.
Well, that's just convenient, isn't it?
It's not convenient, is what it is.
Well, it's convenient that
it has to be like a divine. It's just
because if you're going to critique something, because otherwise everything moves forward.
Well, what do you call? Well, no, I know, but what do you call it when the Force can suddenly do all sorts of crazy shit that like it's like and Force could never do this before, but it's obvious it can open this box because they need to open this box somehow.
That's deus ex machina.
And that's what I'm saying is Geordi's visor is capable of any random ass shit that you want it to be capable of.
I disagree. I disagree with that assertion. I think it's specifically capable with seeing, data of
it's a visual. It's a visual tricorder.
Yeah, he can see spectrum. He can do like spectrum analysis. He always could. That's they've been doing that since the first season that Geordi gets to see like all sorts of spectrum.
I just don't see it's that different than the Force in that sense.
I argue that it is very different like than the Force. Because
very different.
It is because
there's no midichlorian.
What you're arguing with the Force is not, you're not arguing about the Force. You're arguing with the way the Force is portrayed over time, where it's initially described as one thing, and that's nebulous enough so that they start introducing all these other things later that happen to be important to resolve the plot of that particular movie or TV episode.
You yourself referred to Geordi's visor as magic eyeballs.
It is magic eyeballs, but it's magic eyeballs that are doing exactly what they've been doing for the, like, you can set up any magical fantasy world. You can set up Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, whatever. The issue is not that it has some magic business in it. The issue is whether it's consistent and then...
Yeah, right.
And then Deus Ex Machina is that the plot is... the whole plot is resolved because of a specific thing. Not some small portion of the plot is moved forward by...
all kinds of magic are acceptable. All kinds of craziness is acceptable if there are rules put in place. Yeah. And that's the point is not that it's wild and crazy. The point is that there's rules put in place.
And I'm glad you agree with me on that point.
On that point, I'm just saying that sometimes Geordi's visor stretches into like they get a little creative.
And maybe that's the case. I don't think that's the case in this episode because all he's doing is looking at rocks and saying, hey, there's some weird shit on this rocks, which he's done a ton of times before. That's one of his tools. Data is an android and he can calculate shit fast. It's not deus ex machina because he calculates some shit fast.
It's
and helps
data
the plot.
Is machina.
They're
that's,
using
that's
the
character. That's a little different.
It's not. They're using
it is, the because a computer calculates shit fast. That's what a computer
Geordi
does.
Geordi can see things that people can't, even though he's blind. That's the point of that character.
Convenient
Data
they've never
Data
defined
has certain
it for
things.
Us.
Worf is strong and bullheaded. Riker is this. You know, you have the characters. They have their traits. Then they have stories that play out based off of what happens with those traits. These are fictional stories.
Yeah, they are fictional stories. I'm just saying it's convenient. We need a technical manual on Geordi's visor so we can know specifically what it's capable of.
So write into
there
feedback.
I
bet
Star
it's
Trek.
Not
com.
Canon for some reason.
and
it's not canon because they haven't decided yet.
What you think about this whole particular issue. In the meantime, we do make...
I didn't say it was bad.
Yeah, did not say it was bad, but we do need to move on to other issues. But we will first take a break.
First.
When we return from the break. Oh my God, the conversations we will have.
How does that feel?
I can't even tell you. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be...
Don't touch that dial.
The most interesting stuff is going to happen in this last third of the show. That much I can almost guarantee.
You'll be blown away.
Be right
back. I'm sure you're glad to hear that.
Be right back.
Why are you getting a drink?
Because I'm thirsty. And we're back.
How did that feel?
It felt great. It felt great. That was a good break.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey.
Why did you do that?
Because I had to.
Why did you do that?
Jesse.
What?
Why did you do that?
Why did you do that, Jesse?
Do what?
Jesse, why did you do that?
Why did I do it?
Why did you do that?
Why did you do that?
I don't know.
Vulcan isolationists.
Yeah,
I know, right?
These guys come up every now and then. Not exactly the isolationists, but it's a thing they've gone back to a few times on Discovery, I think Enterprise, a few other spots where there's Vulcan
fundamentalists.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. It makes sense when you think about it that a lot of these strict societies, and Vulcan's a fairly strict society, would have some of these types of, you know, foment this type of subversive behavior. Totally. People wanting to do some different things.
An illogical philosophy.
You know, we don't know much about that. I guess it's only presented insofar as we need to have some motivation for the T'Pol character.
T'Pol.
But it all fits. It all makes sense. It adds a nice little interesting flavor to Vulcan.
I dig it.
Lore and mythology. I thought it was really fun and real Star Trek style to have the resolution to the story be to be all peaceful and nice.
Mm-hmm. Totally. That's totally cool. Very Star Trek.
And
especially TNG.
I like the idea that the, you know, you have this T'Pol character who's really wants to use all this terrible violence, and she puts together this device and just assumes she's very confident that this device is going to totally work. She's
so frustrated when it doesn't work. She's just like, oh.
Well, the thing is forget about the actual, like, you know, conclusion of the episode. She's all like fumbling, putting this thing together, this ancient device that she's only just gotten the pieces to. And she's already like threatening this Narek dude and other people being all like, fuck you, basically. And she's like totally confident that she's just going to put these rocks together and they're going to turn into this magic weapon. And yes, it does actually work, but I just thought it was kind of funny and very sort of classic sci-fi. There's like, oh yes, I just, or classic even like RPG where it's like, just find the three pieces, put them together, and now you have a magic thing, even though it's thousands of years old.
The other relics they found, it was always like some kind of like broken pottery.
Yeah, it was.
Thing. It kept being like
it was like the same thing over and over.
Yeah, it was the same like collection of like props.
That that whole psionic resonator stone of Gaul thing, it was like the old face your fears to beat the monster kind of situation with a little bit of don't think bad shit from Ghostbusters. So even Worf could be non-violent, you know, like I whenever somebody tells me don't think of this thing, it's like, how do you not inherently think of that thing? Of course, but
we're not in Starfleet.
Don't think that's
true.
We might not have passed the test.
I don't think we would.
The psychological test.
No, but yeah, it is classic kind of thing. Like her own folly. She was too eager to cause violence. She didn't like read the fine print or whatever.
Well, there was an interesting, but you could potentially call this a missed opportunity. Although, man,
did you notice after that too? After she missed it the last time, she all gripped her fist. She was like, oh shucks.
Yeah.
She was,
I know.
If you watch the scene right at the end when she finally gives up, she's like,
But what's potentially a missed opportunity here, and I don't care about it and I'll just keep it in my headcanon, is right at the end.
Headcanon.
I'm gonna blast it from my headcanon.
Picard is talking about how, like, you know, the third thing is the peace and it's a warning and all this other blah, blah, blah.
Oh yeah. That whole weird thing where he was like telling, he was all like, oh, I'm very interested in this whole thing. She's like, I'm not an archaeologist.
Right. And like Picard all knew the mythology and shit. And she was like, I don't give a shit.
But what he suggests happened, why this artifact was like put away or whatever, is he said that once Vulcans, you know, even though he didn't go into all the details, he basically is like, once Vulcans took on Surak's philosophy of peace and logic and all that, the weapon became ineffective. Mm-hmm. And as a result, that's why it was no longer useful. I think it's even more interesting to actually think of it a little bit differently, that it was the use of the weapon that prompted and incentivized moving to this philosophy of peace and logic, because the people who did that were the ones who survived. So it was almost a survival of the fittest evolutionary thing, where the weapon becomes less effective the larger the group of people who adhere to the peaceful logic philosophy is. So I kind of choose to think of it that's how it happened, as opposed to being an unconnected thing. Yeah, it is a really terrible
weapon. You could see people like, listen, if we're going to survive this, then we have to.
And since it amplifies, you imagine if you have like large groups of people, it's just is even more powerful. It's that type of exponential weapon. That's the implication here, even though we didn't get to see it.
Yeah. And if the Vulcans were like extra bad back in the day, like, you know, it would have been pretty devastated.
What was the name of that one dude, that engineer dude? It's not Vekor. It was
Narek.
Narek. Yeah, we got to see it work on Narek. It like enveloped him, and he like flew back. I don't know if you know, if you watch that scene again, where like she's using the device on Narek, and he all flies back. If you watch him closely the whole time, he flies all the way back. It looks like he's stopping, and then he gets yanked again backwards. And I couldn't tell what was happening. It almost looked like...
You think they fucked up the stunt?
I think they fucked up the stunt somehow, and I don't know if they like threw a dummy back and then yanked on it afterwards, but it seriously looked like something got pulled back 20 feet, started to slow down, and then got yanked back another 5 feet. You should watch it. Watch
there's
that
a
one
lot
part.
Of I'll have to check that out. There's a lot of stuff you don't necessarily notice the first time around. And I've seen this episode a million times, but this was the first time I noticed that, towards the beginning of the first episode, Riker, when they're in that California parkland, Riker goes up to a rock and he does his standard, like Riker puts his knee up on the rock, kind of standard Riker thing. Yeah. But then Geordi comes up and almost awkwardly comes up and he does the same thing and mirrors putting his knee up. And then as soon as he does that, Riker puts his knee down and they're all talking this whole time. There's like lines going on, but it's just, I've never seen Geordi ever do that before or since, and it just looked peculiar to see them both standing up there like in the same pose with knee up and then their elbow crooked on their other thing, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I don't remember Geordi doing that. I'll have to look at that.
You gotta go look
it up. I gotta go look it up.
We all gotta go watch the episode yet again.
Well, speaking of Riker posing, when they were in Baran's office, it was Baran and Riker, it was Riker.
When Baran was in the chair that made him look like a child because his feet didn't touch the ground.
Yeah, and Riker was lounging in the most uncomfortable looking way one could imagine lounging.
He was lounging like Leia in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, and it's like, Riker, if he lounges over people, not under, kind of like what you were saying, like he does like the Riker leg.
He lounges over people, you're right. But by the way, you talk about, and assert even, you argue that there was a relationship or an implied relationship between Baran and T'Lara / T'Pol.
T'Pol.
But T'Pol.
The Michelle.
But while I disagree with that, I think there was somewhat of an implied or at least an implied potential relationship between Riker and Baran.
Okay.
Because Riker was being all sexy and charming.
He was being sexy
and
charming.
He was flirting with Baran. Now, you could argue, it was like, oh, yes, he was undercover and he was trying to use whatever advantage or whatever. Mm-hmm. They didn't make it explicit, but to me, it read, the coding of that read, Riker was like, hey, this is the role I'm going to play. I'm going to take advantage of this guy having a sweet eye on me. And Riker kept smiling. Riker smiles so much in these fucking two episodes. Like, Riker's constantly like pointing his blue eyes at people and being all like, hey, I'm smiling. And then Picard is smiling all the time. Like, every time somebody's like, oh, you're going to have to kill this person or whatever, Riker's all like, I get to kill Picard. Picard's all like smiling when he's like, ooh, we're gonna have to fight each other. It's gonna be so fun. Right. We're gonna have so much fun hating on each
it's
other.
It's like nobody, you always expect them to start winking, but they never wink.
So. Yeah. I mean, I liked it. I could see somebody critiquing this episode saying, why are they not taking the situation seriously? There's like all sorts of bad stuff going on. And they're all like, ooh, this is so fun. We're going to pretend to be bad guys. Let's meet in our secret room and discuss how we're tricking the bad guys.
Picard and Riker. Picard
issue with the Picard.
Yeah, Picard, man. Riker. When Picard punches Riker, Riker almost looks like he's like, hey, man, come on. But then Riker gets to punch him back, and so he liked that. This line was reminiscent of actually season 3 of Picard
kicks Riker.
Picard season 3,
well, you always seem to be after my job.
Yeah.
Like that was like direct, like season 3, that was what season 3 was. Picard was kind of like all about in some way.
Just to clarify, Dan, just to clarify, which season
of Picard?
Yeah, which season?
Season 3.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, just in case it wasn't clear before. Just want to make sure. All right. Other bits and bobs. We talked about the conclusion, all that. We can't, of course, not discuss the whole corral business.
Oh, that was James Worthy.
Yeah, James Worthy.
This isn't a good idea.
From the LA Lakers. Yeah. The whole gag of him being hilariously tall.
Yeah.
The tallest Klingon ever.
Gigantic.
And that was funny.
And that was right after Worf and Data had that little spat. Then Data immediately is talking to this guy, and you can tell Worf is like, this is not gonna work, how he's trying to talk to this guy. And he's just like, oh, this is not gonna work. He's not gonna get through to this guy, because Worf knows the deal.
And like, Worf is all like, we could just fuck him up. And Data's like, nah, we can't fuck him up. And then Worf is all like, but what about a health and safety? And then Data's like, oh, it's not in the spirit of the treaty, but let's fuck him up.
Yeah.
He can file a complaint.
When Worf left the bridge and Data sort of sat back, if you look at Troy, she's all like, has this like sort of sly like look on her face, like like kind of like he thinks he's so I can't even tell what kind of look it is. She's like smirking or something, like
she had dated
she's like these fucking guys right here or something.
So that was fun. Of course, the classic scene with him emptying the blood wine in one move. Yeah. He takes the glass, looks at it briefly as he just goes to pour it out.
Vulcans don't eat replicator food. They don't dig it.
You mean Klingons?
I'm sorry. Yes, Klingons. My brain always gets.
They do like a barrel. They'll have their replicators, but they like their have their barrels of blood wine. Yeah, barrels of gok.
They're not too keen on the most replicated janks.
I say kill it.
And somebody's like, Commander Worf thought this was the best replicated version of
it. He said it was a good version. He said it was a very good.
Yeah. He says it's very good.
But again, what does Worf know? Worf grew up on Earth.
He grew up in like the Ukraine or something.
Worf has got good taste in prune juice and other things, but not necessarily in blood wine and other things.
And he knows how to eat radishes.
Even though it was somewhat predictable, the other gag I really liked was the Picard switching the transponder and having done that like a while ago. So that he knew any time that Baran tried to kill him, he would just zap himself, which was funny.
Yeah, I mean... It was kind of like, I guess it was fine. It was, but there was also this sort of feeling like, okay, that was easy. Like, was that the point? Is that it was so easy?
I think in
Or is it just kind of like an easy wrap up? Like, it's like kind of like, because, you know, he didn't
Picard
have
Picard and Riker are never in any actual danger.
Yeah, basically. So they didn't have to put on this facade at all this whole time. At least not to the level to which they did.
But it was a gambit.
I mean, they were trying.
That was the gambit, friend.
I guess they had to figure out the mystery or whatever. It just seems like they put a lot of lives in danger unnecessarily.
Well, okay. I think for me, the reason why this all works dramatically is that on a TV show, we know that Picard and them, they're going to be fine in the end. The entertainment isn't how they get to that story and what happens along the way.
I wasn't really bothered by how simple it was for Picard to win against Baran, but at the same time, I was like, well, that was a quick wrap up.
But the Baran and all these people are not particularly competent. And that includes T'Pol.
T'Pol of the Bashal?
Riker and Picard are pretty much in feeling comfortable the whole time, right? That anything's going on. The primary drama is not in whether Picard or Riker are going to get fucked up, but how are they going to deal with the fact that they're trying to be undercover and they might be asked to do violence against, you know, like this Federation outpost. They've got to come up with a clever plan, a last minute clever plan to help avoid that. How they're going to shoot at the Enterprise.
They sure got lucky that Data came upon them when they did, because Data came upon them right after Picard.
They came upon them.
Yes.
He would destroy the shield generator. Then they transported up the artifacts, but they didn't get all the artifacts they need. Yes. So he was like, okay, better blow them up. And then Data like saves the day.
That was some very TV style just in time plot mechanics.
Because it was kind of weird because they put all that effort into Picard being sneaky about, like, you know, blasting the shield. By the way, blasting a shield generator, like, I mean, you got to have a really good reason to do that. I mean, we're presuming that they do. On a side.
But he didn't do it. He purposely didn't do it hardcore because they were able to get their shields back.
As an aside, Data took Riker to the brig at the end of the episode for breaking all those.
Funny.
Which was funny. But Picard broke some rules too. And I guess that was the joke though, is that you're dead because I don't know. Because.
I want to know if Data did not know about any rules that Picard broke, but he was witness to Riker breaking
witness
rules.
That's the difference. Do you think Data really took him to the brig? Data must have gotten that joke.
Data did get the joke, and Data did take him to the brig. I think that's the correct interpretation. Because for Data, the joke is you put Riker in the brig for like 4 or 5 days, and then you let him out, and you're like, I'm just fooling. Because when you're an android, you can turn off your like internal chronometer, and you can just not care.
Like in Generations, when he like made Beverly push Beverly off the boat into the water,
because he didn't get that joke.
Not funny, Data.
The problem with that in Generations is it was kind of funny. I'm not into cruelty. I'm not into pushing people into pools and things like that. It's not nice. But the way they that was pretty funny.
Because he just like violently, like, he's just like,
oh, this is hilarious.
And it's okay because they didn't have cell phones.
Yeah, precisely. If they had cell phones, although in this episode, it looks like Geordi's like at the conference table, looks like he's like got an iPhone 14 or something, like in a nice, you know, like an OtterBox case.
Speaking of communication back and forth, so there was some kind of submarine sandwich. What was that message they sent?
Subterranean vampiric lizards.
No, subharmonic analysis.
Typical.
I've got something. I've been studying the comlink Commander Riker used to transmit the command codes. I didn't see anything at first.
Transmit them,
but then I
codes.
Ran the transmission through a subharmonic analysis, and he found some kind of numbers that were command codes and all that good stuff. While that was that the same scene that did you remember? There was the scene where T'Pol was at the the computer, and there was some kind of like. Spinning circle.
You'd think she'd be a better friend.
It looks like one of those games where you.
She
like,
didn't.
Have
to she was
up.
Working alone. It seemed because you'd think she'd be a better friend with a name like T'Pol.
T'Pol. Yeah. Yeah.
She says
it's a funny joke. When they're trying to transport the artifacts up. Oh, this was back when they were trying to transport the artifacts up, and Picard blows up the shield generator. T'Pol is playing some version of like Snake. On her computer,
yeah,
because there's like
yeah.
a half, there's a half bouncy green circle spinning around, and this line that I want to know how to play that game to control this. I wish like controlling a starship was like a bunch of mini games like that. That'd be awesome.
That's what it looked like it was.
Well, yeah. The other thing that came up was that Riker, when Riker gets kidnapped initially by these folks, Picard is intelligent enough and clever enough to first create antagonism with Riker. To sort of signal to Riker, hey, I'm alive, but we're going to play this role. Second, he puts him in a position to... puts Riker in a position to ingratiate himself to Baran by creating a scenario that he knows Riker can solve. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that it's like this classic thing where all the Starfleet people are really good at engineering. Like the engineers are the best at engineering, but Riker is not only able to solve this, but he's Picard knows he's capable of solving this particular
capable.
Picard, as we noted, is capable of reprogramming the transponder codes right. in order to reverse that. It reminded me of back in the 90s. I don't know if either of you ever played these. We might have mentioned it before on the podcast. But do you remember those? They had those MUDs, multi-user dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
Which were sort of text-based proto versions of RPGs, you know, massively multiplayer online RPGs. Except it was all text-based.
I will not play games with you.
They originated with Dungeons and Dragons type stuff, and then various spin-offs. But that set of tools was also used for some Star Trek versions. And I tried to join up with one, but the problem was is you had to sort of like join effectively like a guild, like it would be in Dungeons and Dragons.
What?
And then you would have sub parties and things. But the main thing was, is you had to do all this math in order to, because like the low level people.
I'm sorry.
When you were like an ensign or whatever, you had to learn all these commands to do math to transfer energy from like shields to weapons and all this other. And
you had to actually go to the Starfleet
Academy.
Yeah,
you had to download text files that had all this information that you had to memorize. Shit. And then you'd be tested in like live action, basically things where you're doing RPG stuff. And you had to do that until you rose through the ranks to get
Holy
to captain.
Balls, dude.
I never got promoted because I was like, I can't remember this.
No,
fucking
that sounds
shit.
Rough.
It's too complicated. But I was sad because it looked really fun. Like I had fun trying to play those things. But anyway, yeah, you can probably maybe somebody's
like Starfleet for real.
It might be archived online somewhere. Maybe somebody's still playing the online the MUDs, the old text based MUDs. But something to check out.
There's definitely someone playing something somewhere on some kind of emulated Telnet something. Yeah,
there was a Telnet thing. You had to Telnet into the business. It wasn't even a BBS related thing. It was pre-web and not a BBS thing.
Right. That's quite right.
That was a good aside.
That was a good aside. They were lucky when Picard and Riker zapped, transported back to the Enterprise. And then, like, there was who was standing there? It was
Worf.
Worf, Beverly Crusher, and some random person.
Guy, security.
They're
guy.
Lucky no
they
one
zapped him.
They were lucky that no one was like, Picard, you're alive!
Yes.
Or anything like that.
Right.
And actually, when.
Because everybody was kind of like, okay.
Yeah, so that must be part of Starfleet training where they're like, don't ever make assumptions, you know. Yeah. So they,
and then when they popped up in the ready room and they were like,
"Oh, right, right." No one was like, "I won't say it. You don't say it either. You don't say it either. You can't say it's Picard. They don't know. We have to assume they don't know."
But then remember our training.
Remember when Riker shot Crusher and Worf.
Yeah, he said sorry.
Yeah, and Picard like almost looked a little like bummed out.
Yeah, he was like whoa,
oh,
he's
like,
minute.
Oh man, he shot Beverly. You know, that's not cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was some good either some serendipitous quietude or
quietude,
or it was some good Starfleet training that they didn't blow up their spot by saying,
I think it was Starfleet
training.
Hey,
Picard and Riker, I thought you guys were on a secret mission somewhere. What are you doing here?
And there was like the transmission or whatever, the secret, you know.
Oh yeah, the secret that
they knew a little bit and they figured it out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They smart.
Well, it was a puzzle solving. It was an adventure.
It's the Enterprise.
It was an archaeological puzzle. Data was good because Data's like solving puzzles, so he was able to like flex those muscles a little bit here.
Use your brain.
Riker got to be sexy and flirty and badass with Baran and
savage, warlike.
I know a lot of people are not a huge fan of this episode.
Really? Why? I thought it's fun.
I think the opinion is very... I don't think anybody thinks it's bad, but I think there's a lot in the seventh season where, again, so much of what was done in this episode was done in some fashion previously on TNG. They're playing with some of these storylines again, like
previously,
like
on
Captain's
TNG.
Holiday, like Redemption 2, etc. Bits and pieces, bits and bobs have been cobbled together to create this seventh season episode.
My name is actually T'Pol.
But I really enjoy, and even Robin Curtis is brought back. They have another Iridian who's not played by James Cromwell this time. Yeah, it's a very tangled web. So I can see some people saying like there's some derivative stuff. You can also kind of feel, like I said earlier, you can feel Patrick Stewart saying like, put me on a ship full of hooligans.
Yeah.
I want to be a hooligan for a couple of weeks. And they're probably saying, all right, here you go, Patrick.
The whole plot of the episode didn't feel like it needed to be two episodes, although it never felt like it dragged on.
No, I think this is what the
didn't drag on, but like the plot just didn't feel like it needed to be.
I agree. The plot didn't warrant two episodes, but the execution warranted it. All the character stuff was fun.
You didn't mind that it was two episodes.
Yeah, and they gave everybody cool stuff to do. Deanna got stuff to do. Dr. Crusher,
well,
not
let me
as
tell
much,
you
but,
something.
But some good stuff in there. Some pivotal things. So that was nice. Geordi, etc. So all in all, I thought I like it. I think it's a fun romp. It's definitely worth checking out.
It's a fun romp.
All right.
Do you ever wear rompers?
I think, is that a,
do you wear rompers?
Is that like a type of pants?
It's something that I think.
Is it like an overall?
I think it's for women or something.
All right. Well, this is where we are suffering from our lack of representation on this particular podcast program.
Well, I think romper is a romper. Yeah. What is a romper? A loose one-piece garment combining a shirt or blouse and short bloomer-like pants worn by young children. No, older. I've seen adults wear rompers before.
Only on Star Trek.
All right. Well, I've learned something new today. Our audience probably has learned something new today.
That's right.
And what more can we hope to provide?
Many things.
To put out into the world the definition of a romper.
There's something strange here.
I'm guessing, though, a good portion of our audience is like, Patrick, you're stupid. That's the obvious thing. You should know that. All right. Well,
I'm sure you're glad to hear that.
Yes, I am. I now know that. But, all right.
Sit down.
I think we've concluded what we needed to discuss for this week.
That's right.
We've met all of our podcasting obligations.
Oh, wait. Check out this one.
Facing charges. Okay. Facing charges.
Is this the game Guess the Context from the Note? Guess the Sound from the Context?
Guess the context based on a short portion of the line.
All right.
Facing charges.
Facing charges?
Facing charges.
All right. Can you provide the context? I can't
facing
guess.
Facing charges. But they're also facing charges.
No,
is that
okay. It's yawning Picard.
Because
It sounded like Patrick Stewart, but I was like, I don't remember him making that kind of goofy voice.
Here's the question.
Facing charges.
And here's the answer.
But they're also facing charges from the Klingons, the Cardassians.
Facing
charges.
Making me sleepy. All right. So
this is the power of the mind.
Next week.
I want to start a new segment.
Hold on.
A new segment called.
A new It's Got Star Trek segment.
Called.
You're incredibly stupid.
Or.
You're incredibly smart.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I'm down with that. Next week, let's do
that.
So
is it
incredibly stupid?
Or is it
incredibly smart?
Now, are you talking about the episode or a specific aspect?
Just any, yeah, anything we can come up with.
I'll say the first. No, wait, the second.
The second? Wait, what?
I'll say the latter.
The latter. No, incredibly smart.
Incredibly smart.
Wait, what is incredibly smart?
Everything. Because you didn't specify. You said anything, so no, I'm saying everything.
No, but I'm saying this is going to be a new segment.
Yes, I
want. Oh, so yo, so I, so it could be anything.
So far, everything.
Everything is, ever is incredibly smart.
Yes, until proven otherwise, which may be next week, for all we know. So
478 B.
Everything that we've said is incredibly smart.
I agree with that. I think that's a fair assessment.
And everything we will say next week will also.
I think that's a fair self-assessment, Jesse. Thank you. Next week, we will be forgoing Dan's algorithm for a bit.
Actually, we technically forewent my algorithm today.
We didn't forego it. We just went a little further down the list than we normally do because we didn't like the episode.
Well, I don't.
We is a little strong there. Dan wants us to be clear that he would have argued for one of the episodes higher up on the list.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm actually fine that we did this episode.
It's a good episode. It's more entertaining.
I just don't want to feel like the audience has been lied to.
Okay, yes. Yeah. So we did use the algorithm. It's not that we didn't use the algorithm. It's just that instead of picking like the top choice of the
different
algorithm,
ways to use
we
it.
We went down the list a couple, four or five spots.
We're writing our own rules.
I remember asking like, what's the deal, guys? And you guys were like, well, this is the deal. And I was like, okay.
I was like, we don't want to fucking do it's that. Like,
we're gonna do this one, or we're gonna do this one.
I would have done whatever because I'm all about science.
Okay,
these guys are about magic over here.
That's exactly correct. That's exactly correct. But yes, next week we are foregoing the algorithm because we're coming up on Star Trek: Strange New Worlds. That's starting in a couple of weeks. We will be covering the season two of Star Trek: Strange New Worlds as those episodes come out. Dan's getting super excited about something, but I'm very quickly going to conclude my point, which is so. Next week we are going to do Star Trek: The Original Series episode Court Martial. I believe it was from the first season.
Kill him.
Because Court Martial is, first of all, just a great episode, right? So that's a good enough reason.
That
to
is precisely
what we're doing. Jesus fucking Christ.
I keep forgetting that I'm not supposed to double click on this app.
But
that is precisely what we must
I
do.
Also think that Court Martial may be indirectly informative of at least one storyline on Star Trek: Strange New Worlds. For those who haven't seen it, I won't spoil it. But I think very early in the season, potentially even the first episode, we may be seeing some flavors that were perhaps, if not initiated in Court Martial, at least play a big role in Court Martial in terms of some sort of visual design cues.
I can dig it.
The idea of a Starfleet Court Martial tribunal, that sort of thing.
That is all I was waiting for.
So next week we're going to do Court Martial. The following week we will start our coverage of Star Trek: Strange New Worlds season 2 with whatever the first episode is called, which I forget at the moment. I think they really
kill it.
Some of the episode titles, but anyway. We will keep you posted on that. So we can now, before we close up shop officially, we will go back to Dan. We'll throw it back to Dan, who was making ooh, Car 54 sounds a moment ago.
Gunther Tootie?
Yeah, Gunther Tootie, ooh, Car 54. Car 54, where are you? Sounds, making those types of sounds, indicating that he has something that he wants to provide to the audience before we close down the recording for the evening. Dan, what is it?
I'm dead.
No, I actually cut that. Wait, isn't this an awesome, like, this is a good robot voice.
Scan complete.
That's like perfect. But that's not what I was going to get.
Pretty good, I'd say.
I think we've all gotten a small hint of Dan's current fetish.
Scan complete.
Yes.
Oh, this is perfect echo on that. Okay. We're going to play Guess the Significance. I think you guys will figure this out.
All right. This is yet another new new thing you're introducing at the very tail end of the episode.
I know. I forgot. But I would be remiss, I guess, if I didn't.
Release inertial dampers and cut power to decks 31 through 37.
Aye, sir.
Dampers. As opposed to dampeners.
Dampers, pampers.
This goes way back.
Campers,
on the
pampers.
Star Trek podcast is...
Scampers.
The whole... inertial dampers versus
a full diagnostic of your intermix chamber wouldn't hurt either.
If you want to know more about our opinions on the dampers versus dampeners debate and sort of our study of this topic, just start, you know, go back to episode one of It's Got Star Trek and listen clean through till today to episode 187. Shouldn't take you too long. They're usually about an hour and a half.
A couple of years.
I must have asked too many questions.
All right. So you know what's happening next week. We've concluded the discussion for this week. We've concluded the discussion.
Cough. Excuse me.
We've concluded the discussion for this week, so we can.
You're lying.
We can now proceed to ending the show. With that, we wish you all a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
What?
Wow.
Number one, will you set a course for Starbase 227? I'll join you on the bridge shortly.
Wait a minute. You've been declared dead. You can't give orders around here.
If we are to adhere to the exact letter of Starfleet regulations, then technically, sir, you have been declared a renegade. In fact, I believe you are facing 12 counts of court-martial offenses. You cannot give orders either, sir.
That's quite right. And as I'm supposed to be dead, I'll go and get some sleep. And, Mr. Data, I suggest that you escort Commander Riker to the brig.
Aye, sir. This way, sir.
Data, he was joking. You know that, right? Data?